I'm Peter Michaels. Patrick Bateman is my usual co-host of The Road, The Stage, and he's, we'll say, on assignment.
On assignment.
I don't really, like, have you ever noticed, like, sportscasters?
Yeah.
When one of the sportscasters isn't there, they're like, so-and-so is on assignment. What the hell does that mean?
You know what I think? Well, it could be on a bender, but it could also be, you know, they're investigating, you know, investigative journalist. They could be like investigating.
He's the they're leading a double life. He's leading a double life on
me.
Maybe. Trevor Hurst is here from a Econoline Crush playing at Bose Barn Stage tonight in Red Deer. Did you make the trek out here on a bike? Was it a bike trip to get out to the coast from Manitoba?
To BC. And that was not smart. But
I was thinking that might have been a bit of a challenge. But
it was a challenge. I wanted to get the bike out there to the West Coast because there's a dealership out there that deals in Husqvarna. And my bike was kind of a rare thing. And so I wanted to get it out there just because, A, you can ride it. Weather's better when I'm out there, whatever. But then when I got it out there, I was like, you know, maybe I'll just park this thing for a while. Because after that experience, like, it was awful. I think my clutch broke. I had to fix that on the road, and there was a lot of rain. I mean, I enjoyed it, too, though. I love riding.
How old is the bike? Give me
a
little details on the
bike. It's a 2020 Svartpillen 701. It's like a kind of a high-tech, hybrid-y street enduro kind of thing.
Okay,
it's cool.
Comfortable? Because that's a long trek. So how long a drives or how long a days?
It took me, three days if I wouldn't have had to stop, probably three days, three and a half. Like, I made pretty good time.
Yeah, that's not bad at all.
Yeah, but it's like, it was just different. I've ridden a lot of different bikes, and this one is not super comfortable on those long rips, but it wasn't that bad either.
Yeah.
It's very light, so it's kind of cool that way. But yeah, I was thinking about halfway through going, you know, you didn't have to do this the hard way.
Could you ever imagine, like, touring that way? Like, if you had everything in the bus and going, you're like, dudes, I'll meet you in the next town. I'm taking the bike.
Well, isn't that what Neil Peart did?
Well, that's exactly. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And he had a beautiful BMW, one of those. So my bike is, like, not quite where his was. His was like kind of like those enduro-y kind of long distance Paris to Dakar kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Mine's more like, you know, ripped to the neighborhood grocery store and back. So it probably wasn't the smartest thing. But I know that Billy Idol has done that in the past. I think it would be great if you were like in the States where the drives are maybe two, three hours.
Yeah, yeah,
but again, now, like, you know, it's funny, but I'm a big advocate for motorcycles, but it's a, you know, it's very dangerous riding a bike. Like, it just is. And it seems like the traffic has gotten a little bit more, like, they don't see you. You kind of got to be really defensive when you're driving. So I wonder.
Pay attention to the bikers. You got special guys like Trevor out there on the road and those things. So Manitoba's still home? That's home base?
Yeah, yes.
Okay, Manitoba's, I'm going to bring up Killarney.
Oh, neat.
And you'll see if I've done my homework.
Okay.
Dallas Petapies. You know Dallas Petapies from Killarney? Does that name ring a bell?
Yeah, it does kind of ring a bell.
Okay. So there's so many Manitobans that have infested Red Deer.
Yeah.
Maybe infested is the wrong deal. But the reason I know that is I work with a guy who's from Killarney, grew up in Killarney.
Yeah.
And I mentioned that I was chatting with you today for the podcast. He's like, oh, yeah, you lived in Killarney for a little bit. I'm like, who hasn't lived in Killarney?
Well, you know, it was funny because, so I was born in Verdon, Manitoba. And I had a house in Winnipeg, and we had sold it. And we were thinking, like, I was on the road, actually, and my friend says, you know, there's this town in the middle of, it has a lake in the middle of it, Killarney, Manitoba. And I said, yes, I'm very familiar. Well, there's this great place on a house, and next thing you know, I'm living in Killarney. And you know what? It was amazing.
And what is the population? It's small, right? Like under
900 or something?
Okay, I was going to say under 2,000, but yeah, 900, okay.
Yeah, like somewhere in there. Maybe I'm undershooting it. But it was funny because, like, I would go to the built a brand new rink, curling rink, with a couple bowling lanes, kind of rec center, right?
Yeah.
And they had adult skate stick and puck from, say, 1 to 2 in the afternoon. And I would be the only guy out there skating around. So then, like, I thought, you know, I want to mess with the guy. Just, this is how my silly brain works. But the guy's really shy that did the ice, cleaning the ice, and would bring the net out for me. And I would say, thanks, man. And he'd be like, no problem. And I have, when we toured with Kiss, the single at the time was Home.
Yeah.
So I would ask the record reps, can you get me the local jersey, whether, you know, mostly hockey if you can. And what I would do is after two songs, I'd run behind the guitar amps, pull the jersey on, run to the mic stand, and then stand there, you know, Jesus Christ pose, and they'd put a spotlight on me and the place would go nuts.
Yeah.
So I had a collection of jerseys and like that I could never afford, you know, as a musician, whatever, but I had a lot of them. So every day I wore a different one, and the guy would look at me like, Like, what team do you like, you know?
Played for the most, like, you're a Sutter or something, been traded so many times and have all these jerseys. Speaking of having a lot of one particular item of clothing, I do notice a Kiss shirt on your person a lot of times in your social media posts. How many?
Of late.
Is that just of late? Okay, yeah. How many Kiss shirts do you own?
I only own those two, and I never wore them before. It was funny. After the end of this, to the end of when they put the makeup back on, we went across Canada. So this is 96, 97. Gene gave us all like these extra large shirts or whatever, you know, like the, and I was like, I'm never going to wear these.
Yeah.
And then, like, just before this tour, I thought, you know, because David, our drummer, is a huge Kiss fan. And so I thought, you know what? I'm going to wear these in this tour. And yeah, it's kind of fun. And plus, you know, with Kiss getting out of the, like, or at least them
the
stopping.
End of the road.
But yeah. Have you heard this that they're gonna? What do you think?
I was just gonna more from your perspective. What you think? I'm a little hesitant on it, but at the end of the day, I mean, really, what does it matter? As long as the sound is there, look is there. Yeah. But is it cheating? Right? Like, is it?
I don't know either. Like, I don't know what to make of it because you know the other thing that I think is soon, like very soon to happen, is that Gene could go in to some place. And they could like scan him and make and get his voice, and then he could be in movies.
Yeah,
for another 100 years.
Well, and did you hear the news today that McCartney, they're going to release one more Beatles song, might even be a full album, but for sure one last Beatles project.
Yeah,
and they've used AI to go in and grab these. So Paul had these recordings that John Lennon made in about 1976 or 78, I forget when. They used AI to go in and just pull the vocals out of the tapes that he had, and then augment the rest.
Wow.
And so, yeah, so now there will be an AI-generated Beatles song. And I'm a huge Beatles nut. And but, I was like, I'd be excited to have some new material and some stuff that I haven't heard before.
But
I don't, like,
I know.
Is it the real deal then?
And then, like, it gets really scary because, like, what if they put words in your mouth?
Well, yeah. Yep.
Like, and, you know, and you're thinking that I'm saying, like, you know, let's go downtown and burn down the dollar store because they ripped me off. And you're like, you know, and they think it's really you. I mean,
the stories are out there. There was a story out of Arizona where a mom got a phone call from her daughter that said she had been kidnapped and there was a ransom that needed to be paid. And it was her daughter's voice. But luckily, they phoned her while she was at home. The daughter was upstairs. The mom knew the daughter was at home. So she went up. And yeah, it was somebody that had taken her voice from her social media and copied it and used it to hold her for ransom. So it's scary where this can go.
Yeah. And I don't know how would you be able to differentiate the two. I mean, it's got to be so good you can't.
Exactly. And it's only getting better. So yeah, it's a scary time. So I'm very much on the fence of that stuff. I mean, I'm leaning towards no. I would, like, once Kiss is done, Kiss is
done.
That's it, right?
And that should be the beauty of it because it encapsulates a period of time of art.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of think when I'm writing songs and stuff, whether it's my own personal experience, but sometimes I forget who said it, but it's almost like you get a chance to hold a mirror up to society if you want. With your lyrics and stuff, you can kind of say, hey, this is what I'm seeing.
Yep.
And so that encapsulates time. Now, is it less valid when somebody else is performing it other than the original, you know, intended guy or whatever? I don't know, but it does seem odd because it's kind of nice, I think, when you can kind of put that into a thing. Like, I guess humans like to put things in boxes, but you can put it in a box and say, okay, this is from this era. Check this out. Jefferson Airplane, you know?
Yeah.
But if it's always going, like...
But this is from that era, but generated by AI of what AI thinks it would have sounded like back. And, yeah, it's... I don't know. Doesn't nobody see Terminator? Like, this doesn't...
This doesn't end well.
This doesn't end well. Like, somebody's got to step up at some point and say, this is probably...
And wasn't it kind of funny when they all said, like, okay, we're going to take a moratorium on developing AI. Like, who is stopping? Like, sure, buddies. Like, nobody's stopping. Everybody's running with it. Like, there's no, the genie is out of the bottle.
It's totally out of the bottle, and now we got to deal with it while it's here. Okay, so lots of music stuff to get to, but I do actually want to ask you, you probably get asked for advice on music. How do you get into it? How do you tour? How do you have the longevity? Yada, yada, yada. I would like to know your advice for somebody getting into psychiatric nursing.
Wow.
Because my daughter is just in, as a matter of fact, tomorrow she finishes her first year in Edmonton of psychiatric
nursing.
Well, so I told her, I'm talking to a psych nurse. Yeah. I'm going to get you the goods.
I will say that I have a lot of advice, actually, because I experienced some of it. You know, nurses eat their young. So you're going to experience some really crappy nursing behaviors and lateral violence in your job.
Yeah.
Just know that, do everything carefully and do it by the book and make sure that you cover your butt. Also, though, it's a very rewarding, like, of all of the sort of medical things, that, like a psychiatric nurse, we're blessed that we can do some physical stuff, some psychiatric stuff. There's a lot of different roles you can take, administrative and otherwise.
Yeah.
I think it's a very great career. It's an amazing career. I experienced some of the greatest moments in my life, even including, you know, competing with what goes on in the stage. I mean, to see somebody come into an acute situation completely frightened and just in another world, and to be able to work with them and get them stabilized and then get them feeling good enough to go home and watch them walk out the door and go, like, we got you.
Yeah.
Is a really amazing
feeling.
Gives
you that same rush. Well, I mean, a different rush of what it's like, yeah, with those crowds singing your words back to you.
And mindfulness is like the key.
Yeah.
So it's like, no, and boundaries, like in, and that's something that I struggled with, because as a musician, you're a musician 24 hours a day. My father was a farmer. You're a farmer 24 hours a day. Yeah. It was hard for me to leave the job and not bring it home.
Right.
And so she, if I could give any advice, is to really, really, really study mindfulness. To, and even when you're going to see from one client to the other, to take a moment, clear your head from what, because every client is uniquely different and it's all like, but it's a privilege to be able to look after individuals in their most vulnerable moments and never forget that, because it's a privilege.
She's always had a really kind heart. When she was a little girl, we were going to adopt our first pet.
Yeah.
So we had gone to the SPCA here in town, and there was a cat that she loved, and yeah, they took us aside, and they're like, that cat has a heart murmur and is probably not going to live much more than 2 or 3 years. And we're like, oh, okay, well, maybe this. So we explained that to my daughter. That was the cat that she had to have, because she said, if we don't do that, what's going to happen to that cat?
I love it.
So it doesn't surprise me that this is the path that, yeah, she's gone down. Where did it start for you? What kind of triggered it in you that it was something that, like, was the rock and roll stuff first, and then you went to school for the, yeah, psych nursing?
Yeah, like, I got divorced, and so I was very frightened that if I was to continue with music, that I may be an absentee dad, or like the way the music industry was going financially, it was going to be tough to produce, to help with raising these boys.
Yeah.
So I looked at a lot of things and I thought, you know, really, psych nursing is not that different than rock and roll. There's a lot of crazy people. So, and I don't know, you know, I went to an orientation and I, yeah, it just kind of spoke to me. And I really love, like, the fact that rock and roll puts us in situations where you're with all different sorts of people. You could be, mm-hmm, meeting with a politician one moment, you know, and a gangster the next, and all these different people in between. And that skill set, I think, has served me well as a psych nurse.
Yeah, yeah. You know? I could definitely see that translating. And then what about when you were on the road doing it then? Did you have other bands coming up and you go, yeah, Trevor, I'm kind of struggling with... were you giving free medical advice while you're on the road?
No, oh. I don't. Not so much. You know, it's interesting, too, like when I... So when I graduated from my psych nursing in Brandon University, I went to Brandon University psych nursing program. So you get a Bachelor of Science psych nursing. My mother had passed before I graduated, which really bugged me because she couldn't see it.
Yeah.
And I kind of spiraled into a bit of a depression. And there's a girl that shares the same birthday as me in my graduating class that went right out of high school into nursing. And so I had run into her in our hometown, and I said, you know, this is going on, and I don't know if I want to work in the regular hospital or a care home, because that would, you know, my mom and just this whole thing. And she says, well, there's this First Nation just down the road, you know, at Chinookwapka. And she goes, they've been looking for a nurse for about a year and a half. So you should apply. And I go, why do you think I should apply? And she goes, I don't know. I just think you fit. And so I did. I applied, and I got the job. And yeah, it was a little overwhelming at first. But that community is the reason that I'm here playing rock and roll today. Not because, whoa, I didn't want to work there, but because they said, you're given a gift. And the Creator gives you this gift. You're doing a dishonor to yourself and your family and to everyone if you don't share it. And, you know, it doesn't mean you have to share it, you know, but you still should share it. Like, And I just felt like, well, if I'm going to do music again, I'm all in. Then I'm going all in. We're going to do a record. We're going to find some people that believe in us, and we're going to give her. And that's what we're doing.
That is unbelievable. And so, and you're still working with those First Nations folks? Is that like off a tour? Is that
no? I'm still. What I did was my daughter was born, and I looked after her at home, so I took a paternal leave.
Nice.
And then from there, I just went straight into music, put my license on hold.
Okay.
And just said, you know, I'm going to do this music thing. Like it's been very hard throughout my life to half step things or, you know, have a backup plan. I'm not.
Once you're in, you're all in, baby. Yeah.
Yeah. So I really, I was blessed. Like I went to Sweats and I see elders every day when I would go do their, vitals and stuff and house to house. And then the sheer amount of kindness and knowledge and love that I was shown and the things that I learned about the Dakota culture, mm-hmm. honestly, it just, I have nothing but gratitude for that community. They saved my life because I was in a bad place. I was very sad. And they just taught me so much. It's hard to put into words how grateful I am for the experience.
I love those situations where, you know, you don't know who needs who more, right? If they needed you more or if you needed them more is exactly what that.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Like I'm rolling in there and I realize like it's not about so much about me helping or fixing anything. There's nothing broken.
Right.
It's about just being available and providing the care that I'm supposed to provide, being a solid source. I think the biggest thing that I wanted to be was the guy, look, no judgment. Just tell me what's going on. I will try my best to find you the resources you need to get through this. And, it's a great career. Like, I mean, good honor. Like, seriously, yeah. She will enjoy it. I hope she just loves it for the rest of her days because we need psych nurses. They're an important part of our community.
I'm very excited to see where she takes it. My dad was a mental health therapist, so she's, you know, also gets a little bit from that side of my family.
There you go. Nice.
And it's funny, my dad was a big music fan and believed a lot in the healing power of music, which I imagine music also so very important to you.
Yes.
Were you able to mix the two in treatment and bring music in on any of your clients?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that. There's a program out that's called Jordan's Principle that was based on these guys. They had a family member that was born in hospital and never, ever, ever got to go back to his community because of just so many medical complications. And then people fighting over who should pay for what shower head or handrail.
Yeah.
And so they developed this fund so that no kids slip through the cracks. And this is the part where being a musician kind of works well because I can be a little creative with funding, you know, like, okay, so what can we do here? So like, if this is mental health, can I prove that this is good for mental health? So one of the things we start doing is bringing culture and jingle dancing and all these little dancing things and drum groups and driving these kids, you know, to the community center and getting them to do, you know, traditional things and making it so that it was more like, it's not like they wouldn't have done it anyway, but this made it more accessible and we provided rides and we provided a snack and we just made things more comfortable for that to happen.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, like you talk about the healing power of music, when you put on powwow music and you see a little toddler, it's just in, they just start going and you're like, wow, like it's there in the DNA and it's so beautiful to watch, like so beautiful.
Now, will we get to see some of this? A lot of what we're talking about, you've got the documentary Flatlander.
Yes.
Which has not been released yet. It's still in, is it in post-production? What's the status of the doc?
Man, you think making music is hard?
Yeah.
So it wasn't like we were out playing the show in Kitchener, Ontario, and one of the owners of the bar came back and was hanging out with us after the show and asked, you know, what are we doing after this? And I said, well, I'm going to graduate coming up here from university. And he's like, what? What are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm going to be a psychiatric nurse. So we stayed in touch. And then he found out, like, where I was working. And he goes, well, I mean, wow. Like, you know, when I think about your peers, I just can't see this happening. You know, like, I don't really understand. So they came out and they filmed. Many times they came to the community and filmed me in doing my job and, mm-hmm. and spoke with community members. And so we got all this hard footage, but it was hard to finish this the project. And we just this week, we got an Indigenous production company. And it's going to get finished It's going to get finished and it's going to come out, and it should be out before the end of the year, hopefully.
Okay, awesome. Because I did see a little bit of a snippet from it, and yeah. It looks absolutely incredible. And again, just the great marriage between the rock star and the psych nurse and how those two worlds collide.
But I never told anybody, like when I was working there.
So that was going to be my next question, is knowing that the cameras are rolling and you've got a production crew, how do you maintain, just kind of your natural ability to help these people and not think, oh, shit, this is on camera, I have to...
Well, like, they would come out at certain times, but, like, I was probably there for a year before the film crew. They captured some stuff in the musical side before they came to the community. And when I would do the musical things, I would just be on break. I never said to anybody, I'm going to go play shows. I wanted... to be met on level playing field. I wanted them to know Trevor, just me.
Yeah.
And then it was interesting because, like, I think it was Derek, this one guy, he was like, I was driving him back to his house, giving him a ride back to his house, and he's looking at me sideways, and he's looking at his phone, he's looking at me, and I'm like, what are you doing? And he goes, I think I have some music on my phone. Are you the singer? And I'm like, shh. And he goes, okay. So I would, like, I was there probably almost 3 years. And on the last day, one of the med van drivers, he's like, holy mackerel, man. Like, I didn't know this was you.
So you were able to keep the two lives separate.
I tried as much as I could, yeah. And it wasn't because, like, anything, like, nefarious or anything like that. It's just I just wanted to be just a guy. Like, don't make a big deal about me. I'm just a guy. And because I played in a band, like, that's, you know, that's nothing more miraculous than somebody else learning how to run that grader. Like, that thing looks crazy, you know, so whatever, you know. And in the end, I think it probably was a good decision because I like the fact that now they can kind of, if they like our music or whatever, they can kind of say, like, we know him, and yeah. And he's our buddy, and I am their friend, and I love the community. Yeah.
So one thing I noticed quite a bit about you, especially through some social media posts, is you're very grateful.
Oh, yeah.
You like to give a lot of gratitude. Has that always been the case? Because, I mean, again, we'll come across people that have been in, especially the music business, for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's pretty easy to be a very jaded, curmudgeoned, you know, because it can be nasty.
Yes.
But what I loved about watching those videos, I'm like, this guy is just, like, that's all you can ask for. It just seems like you're happy. You thank road crew. You thank the venues that you've been in.
Yeah.
Has it always been like that? Or is that something that you've kind of come around to a little bit?
I think that, when you mature, you start to see things. I think when we were coming up, we were surrounded by record company people. You're surrounded by a lot of people that are concerned with numbers, chart positions, and stuff. And so I don't think that I expressed enough gratitude for what was happening at the time. And I've been away now for a long enough time that when I see, like, holy cow, like, I actually, like, can formulate in my brain, like, okay, somebody has to take money out of their wallet and purchase a ticket. And they have to make that choice whether to buy whatever, bananas or go see Trev. Trev is bananas. Maybe we can get both. I don't know. You know, but I find that gratitude also was something that the Dakota people taught me, and to accept life as it comes, like the creator in the Dakota faith, that you don't stop. Like, it's so easy to see why we butted heads, you know, why the colonialists kind of didn't work, because they don't believe in storing. Like, they don't have vast stockpiles of stuff. It's like you get up tomorrow and the creator is going to show you what's going on.
Yeah.
And I really loved that, you know. I remember telling the chief one time, I said, you know, I think I've been Dakota my whole life. She just turns and looks at me and says, what's wrong with you? You know, just like, but I love the philosophy. I love the fact that you just kind of go with the flow and be very grateful for everything that gets thrown your way, good and bad, because the bad things that suck, and believe me, I've seen a lot of things that suck, they do make you rise to the challenge and they make you a better person. And it's hard sometimes to see it that way.
Especially in the moment.
Oh, gosh.
Especially in the moment. And that's why you got to keep that in the back of your mind, that you know, as this is happening to you right now, it's not everything.
It's not
everything. This is going to be different.
This too shall pass. This too shall pass.
Exactly,
you know? But, and when you are unable, or you think, man, like, I'm reacting bad to this, we have to learn to love ourselves unconditionally. And to accept ourselves, because I think, and I don't want to get too crazy, but I think when we come into the world, it's already set. We already are. And you look at your daughter and you think how she was with the cat. I look at my kids and I watch their behaviors. And you can kind of see that they came with a bit of a game. I don't know, whatever it is, a program.
A little bit of a plan or a foundation
yeah,
or
foundation,
whatever.
Yeah. And really, our job as parents is just don't fuck it up. Like, just don't fuck it up. And it's really hard not to.
Yeah, it really is.
It really is. So, yeah, I find, like, I can't believe that I get the opportunity to play these songs. I can't believe that I get to sit there at night afterwards and meet people at the merch booth and have people tell me stories about what... Because I don't know what our music did. I don't know what happened. I don't know if it was good, if it was bad. Did it impact your life? Did anybody, you know? And they tell me these stories, and you're like, wow. Wow. Like, it was worth that. All the struggles and everything, it was worth it. It was really worth it because it brought so much to certain people's lives. And and then they show up when you're playing show, and you're just like, yeah. So I am beyond grateful, and I think, it's not hard to look and see people that can't do it or were unable to get past the, you know, the jaded part. And I'm just so grateful that I got that lesson too, that I was able to kind of, because there was times when I was very angry and jaded, and there's no doubt this business is, I think I saw it on the internet the other day. It was like listing like the three or four worst and scariest business things to be in. And one's like the mafia, you know, something else. And then the music business was like in there. It's like, what?
And it shouldn't be that way, right? No. Music is supposed to be fun. And I can tell you just, you know, talking about what the music means to people. And I can say firsthand, just the era of my life, when I think back to the late 90s and you think of, you know, the Big Shiny Tunes era of things. And Edge Fest. And I remember the first big festivals that I ever went to, the first time I ever got into a mosh pit was at Edge Fest at Ray City Speedway in Calgary. And I think you guys had played, the one year you were on the second stage.
Yeah.
And then the year after onto the main stage, which I think was the year that Foo Fighters and Green Day were on that bill as well, right?
I remember that show very much because I was like, who picked this venue? I was kind of angry because like you were meant to, you stood on cement all day.
Yeah. Yep.
And I was watching the audience in our set, and I was looking at these kids, and I'm like, oh, man. Like, some of these guys aren't doing well. So I made them give me the hose, and I hosed a bunch of people down because I thought they needed some water. And it was not kind. Like, it was so hot that day, too. So, yeah.
You've always been looking after people, right? You can tell these people are hot and need the water. And I remember vividly that hose coming out as well. So, yeah, I mean, just the memories that are attached to Econoline Crush music. And that whole era, I mean, there was just music in Canada at that time was just so explosive, so new. It was, I think, labeled alternative at the time. But rock. Take me back even just a little step before that. So when Econoline Crush first got together and you guys first started really kind of making music, you were in Seattle?
Yes.
And that was right around the time that everything was changing, right?
It was wild.
So what was it like building a band with essentially the entire music world like completely changing on its head?
I know it was really interesting because simultaneously there was the grunge scene going, but there's also the discovery that this sort of industrial music, Wax Trax out of Chicago and all this, was selling more records, you know, with the changeover from you know, having the honor system to SoundScan. So there was bands like My Life in the Thrill, Kill Cult, Ministry, Nitzareb, Front 242, just on and on and on. And I remember there was a place in Seattle, a cafe where you would write your band name or design a logo on your place setting, and they give you crayons. And we had not played in Seattle yet, but we were making music and distributing little demo things to everybody that we could. And going into this place and seeing Econoline Crush, somebody had done a logo up on the thing. And it was, and even like with verses, I remember that song by Pearl Jam. I forget what it's called. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 against 1, 5, 5. So the debut of that song on KNDD, the night that they debuted it, I was sitting with the DJ, and we were sitting outside the station just listening in his car, and then this next song comes on, and I'm like, wow, I like this. And he gives me a shot, and he goes, idiot, it's your demo for Cruel World.
Wow.
But right after, you know? Yeah. And so we were making headway really well, and it was a scene, man. Like, I remember but how it happened, though, was in The Stranger, I saw an article or an ad singer needed, influences, you know, Ministry, Nine Inch Nails, Frontline Assembly, and Mauve. And it was a Vancouver number. I phoned it. So I went back up to Vancouver, and it was Tom Ferris who started the band Mauve, which ultimately started Network Records. A lot of people think it was Skinny Puppy, but it was actually Mauve.
Yeah.
And so we started a con line together, but there was no way he was going to go on the road again. He just was so jaded from the experience. And I said, well, can I take this thing and run with it? And he goes, have at her. And so that's kind of where it came from. And then we would go down and play in Seattle a lot, and we had a very big Seattle connection. But it wasn't actually, like, created there. It was created Commercial Drive, East Vancouver.
That's amazing. And so 1991, 1992. So we're 30-plus years into this.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've got a brand-new single called No Quitter.
Yes.
And an album that's forthcoming.
Yes.
And, you know, kind of everything that we've talked about so far, when I look at the lyrics and listen to the lyrics of No Quitter.
Yes.
I mean, it's not a surprise to see that this is pouring out of you right now.
Yeah.
It's very much that, you know, again, life is going to throw so much shit your way.
Yep.
Don't quit.
Don't quit.
Keep going.
Yeah. I mean, there's some personal messages about how I felt as like in the second verse, you know, small town boy never felt good enough.
Yeah.
But, you know, the hell with that noise. And I think the biggest thing with I just can't believe that it's been as long as it has. It's shocking at times because it just doesn't feel like it. And I guess that's the story of life. But this record is deeply personal. It contains some of the most personal music I think I've ever written. There's this couple songs on it that when my mom passed and my father passed not too long after, there wasn't a lot of stuff left. There wasn't a lot, like there wasn't videos and movies and things, like just, there just wasn't enough anyway for me. So my desire was to make a record that contained little messages of encouragement and hope and love
mm-hmm.
that my kids could listen to 30 years from now when they're in a moment and maybe I'm not here or I might live a long time. I might be like Keith Richards, but who knows? But if I'm not here, for them to just hold on to. And I'm going to kind of do that from now to the end. Because, like, I've lived enough of a life and been through enough in my world that I think that I can give some ideas of, you know, I don't have answers, but I have some theories. And so I try to sneak them into the songs and try to do things that will resonate. In psych nursing, I call them, like, kernels, like, you'll tell somebody something, not really tell them, you'll just pose a question. And like a week, a month, a year later, pop.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, that's what that means. And it's happened to me personally, so I know how it works. And I think that's the magic, too, of psych nursing is like, we used to have a saying, we don't have the answers, here's your pamphlet. But it really is, we don't have an answer, but here's a theory or here's an idea, because you want the client, you want your client to figure it out the way their brain works, because nobody's brain, two brains are the same. So if you give them sort of an idea, like just, well, do you think that this person has your best interest at heart? Or do you think, you know, and let them work through it. And sometimes it takes a long time for people to see it. And sometimes it takes seconds, you know.
Now, when you're going through and writing some of this stuff, you know, just again, given your background and your training in the psych nursing and you're almost your own client. Does it ever feel that way where you're kind of practicing your trade on yourself?
In a weird way, yeah. And I think this started actually way before psych nursing was, do you remember when it was MTV Unplugged? And they would go, and the first one I saw it in person at the Vogue, was Ray Davies from the Kinks.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's got his book, and he's playing songs, he's talking about it. And he said, you know, I thought I was writing these songs about my asshole brother. But I'm the asshole. And so in the after party, I got to sit down and talk with him about some stuff. And it was a credible moment. And it just kind of dawned on me that I went back and revisited some of my stuff. And I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You know?
I got some apologies to make.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, like I was actually writing a lot. Like the song Wicked is about me. It's not about the person I thought I was writing it about. And so it was very interesting to kind of get the, how your subconscious kind of gets in there and, you know?
Yeah. So when can we expect the album? So the documentary by the end of the year.
That's what I think, an album.
Album documentary tied together?
Hopefully in the fall, yeah. And because we'll probably drop a couple singles, like a couple more singles before we release the record, is what we do in this business. And tease it up really good. But yeah, we'll have it in the fall. And it is, yeah, it's exciting. Like, I mean, I can't believe it, like, to be honest. Like, it's so cool to be doing this and having this opportunity to do a record campaign again and kind of sell the band again.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of questions, too, on the road. Like, people go, well, is this like the one girl in Cranbrook puts it like this. Is this like this, or is it going to be like this? And I go, oh, it's going like this. Because, you know, she was wondering, are you going to go all in, or are you just going to kind of like maintain? And I said, I want to spread the good word to as many people as possible about our music and about our philosophy and about the fact that, like, with No Quitter, it's like, just because you've had these things happen to you, just because you're of a certain age, if you really love to hike, don't stop hiking. Like, maybe you got to change the way you do it, but keep doing what you love. The day you stop living is the day you start dying. So don't stop living. Just live this. Because, like, you know, I lost my parents, and Jesus, like, I would visit them every day now if they were here on this earth. And so just don't take anything for granted and really, really embrace life, because it's a cool ride if you do it right.
How do you impart that wisdom? Because I think we're probably pretty close in age, and I think we've got some similar experiences. I've also lost my parents and the kids and everything. I've gotten to that point, but I think I had to get to this age to get that, because I do remember people telling me those kinds of things back when I was probably in my 20s and 30s.
Yes.
And I was like, yeah, okay, old man, just, you know, keep spouting. But now I get it.
Yeah.
But is there any way to have somebody that's going through it in the heart of that 20s, 30s, and actually have them like, okay, yeah, I get it? I don't know. It's almost like you have to live the experience to get here.
That's a great question, because I don't know. I think, though, that I had a few wake-up calls along the way. I think that the evolution could happen quicker. But I don't know if it does. You know, the cool thing is that now music isn't so controlled by the people. So they can say that, like, okay, you've hit 30, you're an actress or you're an actor, or you're a performer, and you're done. Because you don't speak to anybody anymore, because the youth doesn't want to hear from you.
Right.
But they're ignoring a whole chunk of people that are still evolving and growing. And I feel like now we're starting to see that there's sort of been this marketing campaign, and maybe the fact that you're in your 20s doesn't mean you can't relate to music that was made that your parents like. It also doesn't mean that your parents can't relate to music that was made for these kids, and vice versa. And cross-generational learning. I had an idea, you know, that if with the film, I'm donating the money that we make from, hopefully we're going to do this kind of cool idea with the soundtrack, and I'm going to donate it to make this wellness center in Chinookwapka. And one of my ideas was that if you had a coffee bar, free coffee in the morning, come on in, you have certain members of the community running it, and you have a crafts and, like, traditional art, whether it's beading or leather work or other kinds of things going on one side of the room, and you got these elders sitting over here, they can't help but go over there and start interacting. And I think organic learning that way, trying to get all the people in the room and just naturally watching it unfold, maybe the similar things is at these shows where I see people bringing their kids, they're coming themselves, and we're having this kind of thing where now topics might come up that wouldn't come up before.
Mm-hmm.
And they might talk about things they wouldn't talk about before. I just want to create some opportunities for growth. And the biggest thing, too, for me is, and the band and I talk about this all the time, is I want Conline Crush shows to be a safe space. I want people of all walks of life to feel like they can come and do what Ziggy used to call your free form freak out, you know, kind of like just have your time and be good with it. Be like just great. And you know that it's all good. I got your back. I'm not going to like, just, you know, this is a non-judgment thing. And maybe then we'll create that same kind of idea where certain people start sharing ideas that they might never have thought of sharing before.
And what a beautiful way to carry on a legacy for Ziggy as well. Having that as kind of the foundation of it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what's weird, too, is, like, I don't know if you've experienced this since you lost your parents, but, and they're here, these people that leave. They don't leave. Their memories are here, but also their spirit, their energy. I mean, I sometimes can almost see him on the stage.
Can I tell you a quick story?
Sure.
This was, my dad passed away early in 2021, and he was a big baseball fan and a big music fan.
Yeah.
So later that year, I took a trip to San Francisco for baseball, to go see some baseball games. And while I was there, the game was a total blowout, and I'm a big Giants fan, and so the game just wasn't what I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
But there was an older gentleman that would have been pretty close to the same age as my dad standing beside me, and he struck up a conversation, which is totally what my dad would have done. He would talk to anybody. And so this guy started, we had some talks about baseball and, the old days, which is exactly what my dad would have done. And then he started talking about music, and he talked about being at Altamont.
No.
And I was like, you were at Altamont? And he's like, yeah, you know what Altamont is? I'm like, yeah, I know what Altamont is. And so he told me this whole story about that. He told me the story about seeing The Who at the Cow Palace in San Francisco, all this music stuff. And just as I was there and in the moment, I'm just talking to a guy at a baseball game.
Yeah.
And after I got back to my hotel room and kind of had a chance to think about it and think about, I'm like, that was my dad. Like that guy couldn't have been more like my dad. Talked about the exact same things, struck up a conversation with a stranger.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. They're out there.
I have a story you've got the time. I got a phone call from my sister, and she says, dad's out of a merge, and they put him in a hospital in Strathclyre, Manitoba. And it's about an hour drive from Brandon, where I live. And so as I'm having this phone conversation with my sister, I get this feeling, and I don't know how to describe it, but it was like a sudden push. And I looked at my wife. It's 9:30 at night, and there was a blizzard. It was snowing like crazy. It was probably minus 30 outside. I go, I got to go see Dad. He's going to die tonight. And my wife goes, come on now. Seriously, you can wait till morning. I go, no, it can't. Mom said I got to go. And she goes, Mom said? Trevor, come on. And I was out the door before she could stop me, so I drive there, get there, and he is in rough shape, and we sat and talked for probably, 5 hours, 6 hours, and he passed at 3 a.m, and my other sister showed up right around that time, and, we had a little hug and everything, and I felt pretty good about Dad passing on, and the fact that he was out of his pain, and then we got to share some love and great stories. And there was a moment there where I was like, Dad, in this Apple Music, they even have the crap you like Roger Whittaker, and I played him some Roger Whittaker and Chet Atkins and all this stuff. And I never looked at my gas gauge. I didn't think to. Now it's 4:30 in the morning. I'm in the middle of nowhere. It's minus 40, and I'm starting down the highway, and I have no fuel. I've got an hour to go, and I go, well, I'll go this way. I can cut through Minnedosa. I think that gas station on the highway is open. Now my fuel light's on. I should not be able to go very far. I get to Minnedosa, and there's no gas station open. There's a huge valley, and I'm like, son of a gun, if I get going up and I get through the valley. So now I'm like, I don't know how far, maybe 10 kilometers from Brandon. And I can just see the lights a little bit, and the thing runs out of gas. But it keeps rolling. And I put it in, I'm messing with the thing, and it's just not stopping. It just keeps going and going and going until I can actually see the name of the gas station in the distance.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh. And I have a big cry, and I'm like, thanks, guys. What the hell? And then I think, I don't have mitts. I don't have anything. And I think, God, you'd be so mad at me knowing that I left in a blizzard without all this stuff. So I just, for the hell of it, I go around to the back of the Jeep, and I open the hatch, and there is a gas can and my toque.
No.
And I'm like, what? And I don't remember putting that in there.
Yeah.
So I put the toque on, I grab the gas can, and this car skids up to a halt, and it's all smashed up inside, and the guy flings open the door. Get in, you're going to die out here. It's like, well, thanks for stopping. And I don't tell him anything about anything. I don't tell him my dad had passed. I don't tell him anything. I go, what are you doing? He goes, I got to drive to work. I go, it's 5:30 in the morning. Where do you work? He goes, Portage La Prairie. I go, oh, you got a hell of a way to go in this storm. And he goes, I know, I know. And I go, just drop me at the petrol can. I'll get gas, I'll get the fuel, and I'll take a cab back. Thank you so much for stopping. So I go in, fuel it up, go in, tell the guy, pay for the fuel, tell him to call a cab. And I look outside, and this guy's still sitting there. And I go, hang on. And I run out, and I go, what are you doing? And he looks at me, he goes, I don't know. I just have this feeling I got to drive you to the car. It's incredible, man.
Unbelievable. And I don't, you know, I don't know, do we need to look for the why in those moments or just accept them that they happened?
Just accept it, right?
Like, it's just, don't try to reason with it. Don't try to figure out.
Just go with it, you know, and it's just that the fact that and I truly believe, like, they find a way to get to you. I mean, I will do everything in my power to get to my kids, so.
Beautiful. Well, this has been an amazing conversation, and thank you. Kind of ending on a sad note, but
no, but it's a beautiful note.
It's a beautiful note.
And the thing is, I thank you for allowing me to tell the stories, and I really enjoyed this, and I love this stuff because I like that if somebody takes the time and listens to all this, maybe they'll glean something and realize that, you know, it's worth the ride. Stick around. There's all kinds of little miracles every day.
100%. I don't know if you probably won't remember this, but the last time we were talking before we got recording that you were in town, I picked you up from the hotel, brought you to the radio station for whatever. And really what I took from that was, I just remember I picked you up at the hotel. We drove across town and you had stories. And then you got into the radio station and I got you on air with the guy that was on the air, and you'd pretty much continued that story that we were talking about on the air. And then we got back in the truck and I drove you back up to the hotel, and it was just stories. And I loved it so much. And I told you when I dropped you off, I said, Trevor, you got to write a book. So I'm glad we've got the documentary coming.
Yeah, yeah.
But I am going to say it to you one more time. I think we're going to need a book at some point.
I would enjoy doing that. I think it's it's my ADD brain. If I can get around to doing it, it'd be scraps of paper everywhere. But honestly, it would be nice to tell them. I do enjoy telling stories. I think that's part of this whole journey, is that you collect them.
Yep.
You collect these little tales and these crazy things, and you go, what do you make of this?
Collect and connect, honestly, right? And use those stories to connect.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I'm glad the music is there. We look very forward to the new Econoline Crush stuff in the documentary coming towards the end of the year. And rock the hell out of the boat stage tonight.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Trevor. Appreciate it.